infant.
That's really interesting, because I guess that seems to me the biggest difference, doesn't it? Like, individualism versus the group that you're, you know. How would you describe, I mean, and this is a ridiculously big question, but how would you describe the difference between being raised to think of yourself as part of a group and being raised to think of yourself as primarily an individual?
Well, probably if I'd have taken time to think about this, I could give you a good answer, because attending the public school, we heard more of that. I know, chase your dreams, you're special, figure out what you want to do. And I wouldn't toss that all in the rubbish heap. I mean, there's some good in that. Because, well, the scripture, God didn't give us all the same talents, and we need to figure out what those are and then use them, employ them for His kingdom. Probably our community would stress, well, when somebody, just when we got married, for example, it was amazing. There was so much work to do, but the neighbors came for days that week to help prepare for you, get things organized, set up the pasture so they can tie up horses, get things cleaned up around there. They were packing up after the wedding, all the dishes and everything. Ladies gave up days of their week to come and help. Friends gave up days of their week. Relatives gave up days of their week. And then a lot of people took a day off of work to come to the wedding. It was on a Friday. And then the gifts were just amazing. So it's at times like that, and at times when we have a tragedy, like my brother was in an accident on the road and we didn't know if he was going to make it. He had brain damage. He still does. And when everybody pitches in, they came and helped us bale our hay. The church did, and sent casseroles, checked on us. We knew they were praying for us. And that can go on anywhere else. I'm not saying that's an exclusive Amish thing in any way, shape, or form. But it is stressed to give up your own pursuits and help others if they're in need, certainly. I don't know. Is that the direction you're trying to point me?
So when you see people who are not like that, I guess like an extreme would be like Donald Trump or something, right? I mean, maybe that's too loaded.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, let's go there. Yeah, but if you think about an extreme person who just thinks that, who puts a really low priority on you know, the group. Essentially, as you're saying that, I was thinking there's this really interesting study they do with Western people from the West, Western world and China, where you get a photo, I think it's of like, it's an individual addressing a crowd, right? And you say to people in the West, what is this a picture of? And they'll describe the person and then they'll describe the crowd. If you do that in China, they always do it the other way around.
Really?
They'll describe the crowd and then they'll say, oh yeah, and there's a guy standing in front of them. Because, you know, they think much more collective. I don't know if that's ever been done with Amish people, but I'm imagining they would be more like Chinese people in that respect. They would see the crowd and then the individual. Does that ring true? Everything about our culture primes us to think in terms of meeting your needs, you know, the individual. Like the group is, if I think about my childhood, the group is not... within yours, do you? I mean, even more... It wasn't discussed at all, the idea that you would be... I mean, there's some vague sense that, I don't know... If your country was invaded or something, then you would. But no one's going to invade Britain, are they? Not now. I don't think we ever talked about that stuff. So does that seem really weird when I say that? Like,
that rings true. Although maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask, because I probably think more individually than most of my comrades. Because my job is a little different than most, and I've been more willing to branch out. Although, when the other people in the church felt it was time to steer it back a little bit, then I wanted to be willing to do that.
So what did they say to you?
Well, the ministry approached me. And years ago, when I started writing in the Goshen News, which is a secular newspaper, a little bit different than most, I had told the ministry if they have any problem with it, that they won't have to say anything twice, that I'll gladly give that up. Because it can be an offense to people. It seems like our affairs are being broadcast, or maybe that we're showboating or bragging or something like that. And they said, no, it's not a problem. No, it's okay. So I wrote for 8 years. And then I used a bishop's name that was preaching at a wedding service. And then the ministry approached me and asked me, you know, if I would consider maybe stopping writing. And they didn't. They said, you don't have to. If you do, please stop using names. And I was busy anyway, so I remembered I had told them that I'll give it up if they want me to. So I did, and I stopped. Maybe in that sense. Whereas, you know, a part of me would have wanted to say, oh, whatever, that's not that bad. We want to bow to collective wisdom, I suppose, rather than individual thoughts, notions, wisdom, if you will.
That's so interesting, because it's interesting. I can imagine if that was told as like a short story or a book in British culture, say, that would be presented as a story of like, that would be a sad story of defeat, right? It'd be like the individual bravely expresses himself and then is made to stop by the group. So how do you explain to someone why that isn't a sad story? Because I can see in your life it definitely isn't. It's not like you're suppressing the sadness.
Oh, yeah. No. It would sound like a communist country cracking down on its individuals, right? That's how you would see it?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose because we believe that the church is the bride of Christ, and we know how our leaders are chosen, there's a vote, but then everybody with X amount of votes, let's say 2 votes or 3 votes, is put into the lot, and then there's a lot of prayer that goes on, and then lots are cast, basically, and whoever gets the book with the slip is ordained minister. And we feel like in that way it puts it in God's hands, and we feel that the ministry is handpicked by God. And that along with the Bible is one way of God speaking to us. The ministry for ministers. And there can be, you know, how any power can be corrupted. And that has happened. But as a rule, it doesn't. They have servant hearts, and they're there to look out for everybody. So when 4 ministers that have been handpicked by God agree that a certain thing is the best thing to do, then I would feel arrogant to move against it. And the other thing is that they wouldn't have done anything if I would have kept writing, because they didn't say, you have to stop.
But even, that's so interesting thing there, because even saying, like, it would seem arrogant to a lot of people, that wouldn't seem like such a bad thing. Well, a culture that's, my vote for Donald Trump is not a culture that's that averse to arrogance, right? Like, they can live with arrogance. So I said, why would you explain to someone why arrogance is such a bad thing?
Arrogance is a form of pride. True. And God's word is very explicit that pride does not go into heaven. In a nutshell, that's the best way I can say it.
Right.
We can believe, we can be confident in the abilities that God gave us, and I think we should be, because they come from God. But to believe that we ourselves are worth anything more than anybody else is, I'd be afraid of that, I suppose.
That's so interesting. Have you had moments when you were tempted by individualism? Like, it sounds like the Rumspringer is a time when some people would kind of experiment with those alternatives.
When you say tempted by individualism, you mean to just do what I want to do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Do
Do you, if I say Glossenheit, are you?
Yeah.
Can you? I haven't talked to him at all about Glossenheit, but that may be kind of an umbrella term that'll.
Right. Glossenheit would mean is basically the state of giving up. Does that sound true? Yeah. What you would take it as? State of being given up to whatever God gives, whether that be through the ministry, through circumstances, or through His Word.
So what would be a scenario where, what would be a situation in your life where you'd had to think about Glossenheit?
That one.
Yeah, that one where they say don't stop writing.
Yeah.
So what would have been your, that's really interesting. So so you would think about, well, I would like to do this, but that, can you tell me a bit more about that?
I'd like to fly to the Holy Lands, but our church has agreed that we don't fly. It keeps us slower, keeps us together, the family more together, you know, because if we'd fly, then I could fly to California and do an auction and fly back, whereas now it's not even practical. And so we're at home more. But that would be Glossenheit, I guess. I can't go to the Holy Lands like that if I want to, and giving myself up to that. It would be ever so convenient to have the internet in my office, but I agree that it would make me more conformed to the world, and our church has agreed that we won't participate in the internet, which I support. But that keeps me disciplined. I give myself up to that group decision. Even if we think about, you know, finding a marriage partner, if there was a girl that I thought I really wanted and then she said no, I suppose that could play into that too. Although everybody else has to do that too, it's not just the Amish, I suppose.
Yeah, you just said such a fascinating phrase about, I hadn't thought of it that way, but that it keeps us slower, because that's interesting. Like, we live in a culture where there's such a premium on faster, faster, faster. So, what are the virtues of slowness? The value of slowness?
Probably the ones we talked about with the family and the community. One benefit we see from not having a car or vehicles in that sense is the local next door neighbor community. Because if we'd have cars, then our church district could be scattered across 20 miles. We wouldn't live right beside each other. The neighbors wouldn't come over for supper so often. And the way it is now, our districts are divided geographically, and a lot of places they're not more than a mile wide and a mile long. There's a physical closeness, and perhaps as a result of that, a spiritual or a mental closeness too. The automobiles and airplanes are ever so convenient, and we see the need and the convenience of that speed. But as a group, I suppose we've decided to resist it because of, in lieu of a close-knit community, if you will.
Mm.
I heard one interesting incident where somebody said that the automatic garage door opener is one big downfall of America. Because the guy living right next to his neighbor doesn't have to get out of his car and open the door and chat with his neighbor. He can just push the button, drive right in, and never has to see the neighbor and talk with him. That's probably oversimplified, but
no, that's really interesting, though. That's fascinating. If you can be everywhere, you can kind of be nowhere in a way. Whereas if you've got to be somewhere, you've got to be that place. Is that?
Yes, that's pretty succinct.
I'm just thinking about that. That's so interesting. What aspects of? I mean, this is again. Sorry, I'm conscious that these are really big questions, but. What benefit do you feel you get from... So I'll give you an example. There was a famous case in London a few years ago where a woman who's actually only in her 50s, she died, they don't know how, and in her home, of natural causes. And her body wasn't found for 2.5 years because no one was looking for her. No one knocked on the door. And they only found out when the smell was so bad that neighbours complained, and then they broke in and they found out.
Is that right?
So I guess that's obviously an extreme example of the alternative way of living, right? But what would you say would be the benefits of community that most people who don't have that kind of intense community, that people who don't have that intense kind of community don't get?
You're right, that is a big question. Sense of belonging is so vague and it's abstract, I realize. Sense of being at home. I remember when we moved, and I was almost 8 years old, and we moved from Ohio to Indiana. And there was a while when I had a yearning to move back there. That seemed like home. I was lonely. That, you know, my friends. That can go for everybody. I suppose retaining that. If we think it's a community that embraces Christ's way of living, then denying the airplane, the car, the internet keeps us there. We can see a lot of examples of people that left that, and that's not condemning them in any way, shape, or form, but we can see that their children then went even further and ended up in things, doing things that are accepting things that we would feel are completely wrong. The community, the social aspect of the community is one tie that binds us to what we feel is Christ's model for living. I don't feel like I explained that very well. The original question was, what are the benefits of the community living?
Yeah.
Yeah, as well as whenever you have a problem or have a lot of work to do, there's help there. So I suppose that's a physical benefit. And then the social feeling of belonging and feeling of being one with the bride of Christ.